Merħba għal-programm Minajnejn Barrani, fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Il-programm jixxandar kull nhar ta' tlieta fit-tminieta fil-għaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu, kif ukoll jinstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM. And in today's program, Paolo Bennett, who's half Maltese, half British. And Paolo is going to tell us all about himself to start off. You can talk about your age, how long you've been in Malta, where you live, what you do, Paolo. I'll leave it up to you.
Okay, well, I was born in Chester in England, but my mother is Maltese and my dad's from Liverpool. I'm 65 now, and I've just retired this year. I used to work as a media technician in colleges and University of Liverpool and a few places like that. My earlier background is actually in electronics. I was an apprentice TV repairman, and then I kind of moved into education, into kind of films and stuff, because that's my interest, and repairs. It was sort of a mixed bag of things within that job. So that's really a little bit about me there.
And how long have you been in Malta?
This time I've been here 10 months.
And you live here now?
I'm living here at the moment, but I still have a home in near Liverpool, and I will be going back there. But I see myself as spending more time in Malta than in the UK.
And your mother was Maltese and your father was British?
Yes. My mother met my father here. He was based in Halfar, which was an airfield used by the RAF. Mm-hmm. And they met and they married in September 1937. 1938, they moved to back to England just before the war, really, and then spent a lot. My dad travelled around the world, with my mother, and they, you know, different RAF sort of locations. I mean, Cyprus, Iraq, Palestine, Egypt, Pakistan, India. Malta, of course, as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but this is before you were born, or when you were very young, I assume.
Yes, the period was they got married 1937. I was born 1950, and my father stayed in the RAF to 1954. So I was 4 years old.
So your connection with Malta is obviously through your mother being Maltese, but if they moved away to the UK in the late 30s, how come you kept coming back and have now come back for this period of time?
Well, I like Malta, basically. I was born in Chester in England, but I came to Malta when I was 3, and I stayed till I was 5. And then I went back to England. Now, I had no memory of my early days in England, but I did feel such a change when I went to England at the age of 5. It was a shock, I'd say trauma, going from a sunny, friendly village to go and live in a town in a sort of northern industrial area, which is where I went to live, in Birkenhead, in near Liverpool, in England.
And what village was it here in Malta, do you remember, that you lived in as a child?
Yes, I lived in, Piazza San Leonardo in Mostar.
After the trauma, you got used to living in Liverpool eventually, I guess, but did you keep visiting Malta with your parents on holiday, visiting relatives?
Yeah, we came over for about a year, 61 to 62, spent in Malta. And then the next time, That I came with my mother, just me and my mother. My dad stayed. My dad stayed in England because he was working. The next time I came after that, I came with my girlfriend then in 1972, July 1972, for a 10-day holiday. And then I've been coming ever since. Well, you know, holidays, 2 weeks, a week, 10 days, and that's it basically since 1972.
And you've been coming and going in the late 60s, 70s, I'm interviewing you in your house in Mostar, and there's a lot of 60s memorabilia here. You're even wearing a Beatles t-shirt. Britain that we hear about, the swinging 60s, the music, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. Could you tell us a little bit about those memories?
To be quite clear, really, about it, the 60s was primarily a London phenomenon. When you got outside of that, it was tamed down a lot right across Britain. It wasn't in the way people think it is through the films and the, you know, the programs that we often people, you know, see, and they think that the swinging 60s was it did influence and affect everywhere, but its kind of main creative thrust was primarily in London and Liverpool as well, I must add.
Which is where you were?
Yes. We lived near Liverpool, not actually in Liverpool, but we lived near Liverpool, just you know, about 20 minutes away.
So let's leave Malta aside for one moment and talk about this wonderful period that is so revered by so many people of the 60s, a time of great revolution and culture and new music being created, which is still popular today, as we said, the Beatles. Could you tell us a little bit about living in that period?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was... I felt it coming on, actually, in the way that they seemed to be generally a more liberal feeling within England, which I hadn't experienced in the 50s. There was a sort of more coming together with people. I used to go to hippie concerts in the late 60s. And there was a nice feeling, which actually, funnily enough, reminded me of the Malta that I missed.
The sort of familiarity and caring for each other and...
Absolutely, exactly like that. And prior to that, it wasn't like that at all.
More of the stiff upper lip, traditional picture of Britain that people have a picture of.
Yes, more of that. I mean, and working class culture was also, you know, working within its own, you know, perspective, or the cultural, you know, the way it would operate. That changed as well. That got influenced, and there was a more friendly vibe to the whole scene.
And that started in the 60s, and you were there experiencing it.
Yes, actually, I got a job in a record shop in 1965, and the records that were starting to come out just then were like the Byrds, Mr. Tambourine Man, Sonny and Cher, I Got You Babe, Beatles, you know, Hard Day's Night, Rubber Soul, Revolution, the albums, and there's a whole gamut of music expressing a new freedom, particularly from America, which then was influencing England, which then was then re-exporting back to America.
And at this stage, I think we can safely introduce quite a big thing that is like the elephant in the room, because you're actually related to one of the Beatles, aren't you?
Well, I am, yes. I'm quite proud, really, of the fact that Ringo is a cousin of mine, and you know, I'm pleased to be related in the fact that he's 75 now, and he's still making records. He's just brought an album out just a couple of months ago, and he's at tours with a band called the All Star Band, which has different professional musicians play with him, And I'm proud to be part of that heritage. Absolutely, the most famous band in the world.
Ringo Starr. So you're a first cousin through from your father's side, I would assume?
Second cousin. Through marriage.
And you have met Ringo a number of times, I would think?
Very long time ago. People ask me, and it's so long ago, I cannot remember. He was interviewed on Radio Clatterbridge, which was a local hospital radio station, in 1962, not long after he joined the Beatles. And they asked him about relatives, and he says, I have got some in Birkenhead somewhere. But he, obviously, he wasn't familiar with us as part of the family. My dad was a very kind of, he didn't really mix a lot with the family outside of our immediate family. And so the opportunities didn't arise to see Ringo, really. We may have met him once, but it was maybe just a one-off occasion.
Paolo, the 60s, did you get to watch some of these great bands on stage when they first came to prominence? And if so, which bands can you mention and talk about?
Yes, I did. I mean, I used to go to concerts. I actually remembering hitchhiking down to London from Liverpool to a John Lennon peace concert held in 1970. I think it was Victoria Park in London, and there were six stages with all sorts of bands playing music. But going locally, I did see a lot of bands in Liverpool, and some of the names, I'll mention them to you. One band called Colosseum, Keith Hartley Band, Hawkwind, Third Ear Band, Furport Convention, Black Widow, The Nice, The Straubs, The Birds, May Blitz, It's a Beautiful Day, Renaissance, Edgar Broughton Band, Crosby and Nash, Moody Blues, Robert Plant, Santana, Canned Heat, Free, Pink Floyd.
You watched Pink Floyd live. When was that?
I saw them mid-1970 at the Empire Theatre.
So that was the first couple of years of their existence. Was Sid Barrett still with them?
Sid Barrett had left or sort of been eased out about mid-68. No, Dave Gilmour had replaced him in the Pink Floyd at that time because he was no longer reliable. Funny enough, Sid Barrett went to Ibiza about 1970, and I was there in 1971. Okay. I've got a photograph of myself in Ibiza, you know, with my long hair and stuff, and it was kind of ironic or interesting that, you know, Sid Barrett was also there, but the year before.
This was a time when Ibiza was not as well known as it is today as a destination for partying and that kind of thing.
It was becoming a holiday place because General Franco had wanted to develop the economy and wasn't too bothered about the environment and built a lot of hotels to attract Brits for cheap holidays, and you know, but Ibiza attracted an in crowd in the late 60s, early 70s, and they used to go there and party a lot, and probably imbibed in a few things they shouldn't have done as well. That was just, you know, the period there, and but you know, then it sort of, it started to develop as a holiday place, but it was a hippie place, really, and for lots of, like, pop stars and film stars, Ibiza was one of the top places to go.
And going back to Pink Floyd, the reason I'm asking you is that there are many, many Pink Floyd fans in Malta. What was it like watching them in 1970?
Brilliant. Brilliant. I mean, The thing that comes to mind, I mean, I used to listen to the Floyd at that time, and it was what comes to mind is the set the controls for the heart of the sun. I really remember that, and the huge big gong, which was being beaten, you know, by Roger Waters. Do you know, I just remembered it was Roger Waters beating the gong with a, you know, with a big stick, you know, and it was incredibly atmospheric, really enjoyable. I wish I was there now, I really do.
Did they already have a light show at the time, a famous light show?
I can't remember. I think they must have had one, but it would have been, you know, more simple than the later sort of development of the light shows, which are quite fantastic.
But Pink Floyd in 1970 were already a memorable band.
Yes, amongst the, you know, the kind of alternative hippie students. A lot of the people who went there were like students and hippies, mostly, you know, most of them are age about 19, 20 years old, which included me.
So, Paolo, yes. Tell us a little bit about living in Birkenhead. As you said, it was an industrial place. It was very different from Malta. Please elaborate a little bit and tell us, how does it compare to living here in Malta nowadays?
Well, Birkenhead, I mean, its main thing was shipbuilding.
Which is something that it has in common with Malta, because we had a very big shipyard here, which was very important to many people.
That's correct, yes. I think the thing about Birkenhead is the north of England is considered generally, compared to the south of England, a bit grim, because most of the industry is in the north, you know, heavy industry. And so it's a working class area with lots of houses, all sort of in lines of houses. You got the feeling it's not, if I compared it with Malta, I know what it is. Malta has a holiday atmosphere, I feel, all the time. Whereas where I lived, there is no holiday. People were there to survive and work, and that was it. So I say the lines of houses, terraced houses, lots and lots of them. So people were a little bit more, in that sense, like almost like rats, almost, you know, like a cage, going to work, coming home, and just surviving, really, very, very basically. That's what I remember through the 50s. And, you know, my experience in Birkenhead in the early years. Nowadays, I mean, Malta's still, you know, I mean, to me it feels bright and sunny and uplifting to me. Whereas in England, the shipyard is closed now, which doesn't help, so there's more unemployment. And actually, Birkenhead, according to the EU statistics, they said it was one of the most deprived areas in Europe, Birkenhead, because of high unemployment and obviously other social problems which come as a result of unemployment.
That's a shame. And you still own property there, you said?
Not in Birkenhead, but in the area, the area which is actually, to make it even more complex, is split. The general area, the area I live, is a peninsula, and half of it is deprived, socially deprived. The other half is extremely rich. I happen to live in the rich area, but I have a little house. I'm not rich at all by any shape. You know, any shape or form. Mm-hmm. And so, but I moved there for trees and for a bit of countryside, and I got the cheapest house I could, and I put all my money on it just to get this house in that area. But because of the countryside, that was my only interest.
And while in Malta, you live in Mostar, don't you?
Yes, at the moment, I'm at my mother's home. It's a maisonette in Mostar, and she left it to me and my brother, in her will, and we, you know, my brother didn't really want to be have the house, so we made an arrangement, and I live here now. This is where I stay when I come to Malta.
So it's been in your family for quite a long time.
The house was bought in 1972, and my mother moved to Malta beginning of 1972.
Paolo, how do you spend your retirement? What kind of things do you do?
Well, I meditate daily. I really find a lot of benefit because meditation, I've found, I've been meditating for about 45 years. It brings a lot of peace to me.
You do it once a day for a few minutes? How often does meditation take place?
I do at the moment about 35 minutes in the morning. Sometimes I do twice a day, but more often once a day in the morning, and it sets me up for the day. I also do Chinese health exercises, a bit like Tai Chi, called Qigong. They're like stretching exercises. I just do 10 minutes of them, and I enjoy doing that. I write a lot. I think a lot of the stuff I write is expressing, just releasing things. But I also write I write poetry, which highlights how I see things around me, wonderful things, and things sometimes which are a bit sad. I've just recently had a book published, poetry, which sold quite well to people who have been interested in poetry, and they said, oh yes, if you get any books published, we'll buy one, and I've sold quite a few of them. I'm looking forward to writing my next book. This one is called If You Like Poetry, Then Don't Read This Bloody Book. The next one's going to be called Songs of Love and Freedom. And it's going to be a bit different than this one.
So you have the book, the poetry book, and also if listeners are interested in getting a copy, or perhaps they would like to talk to you about meditation or even Chinese exercises, then they can contact Campus FM via the website, and Paolo Bennett will get back to you. But right now, shall we hear a couple of your poems?
Oh, that's really kind of you, Colin. Yes, I've got a couple here prepared. So we'll start with first one. It's called Hi There. Gently moving, a child's eyes wide open smiles into me. For one tiny instant, she becomes the universe. Love is our language, with words not spoken. Tears well up and run down my face, knowing love is all there is in every one of us. And second poem, it's called Coming Home. Much magic for me and you, under a canopy of arabesque blue, awakens in tiny ways things forgotten long ago, can come alive once again. Bright, rich radiance guide us to this paradise within. Let the city walls soften, allow history to be forgotten. In one perfect moment, all is understood. Come on, let's dance a mile or two.
jintisamaw il-program minajnejn barranin fuq Campus FM li xandar kullnar ta' tlieta fit-tminja ta' filgħaxija b'repetizzjoni l-ħamis fl-10 ta' filgħodu. Kif ukoll jitstab fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus FM.
What about the changes you've seen in Malta since the 70s, since you started coming?
I would say, and this is in keeping with, I'd say, a general pattern, I think Malta's become more frantic. There's more traffic on the roads. People seem more stressed. So I remember picking up a leaflet from the tourist information in Valletta, and it was advertising Malta as a place of peace, a place to come to for peace and quiet. That was in 1992. I don't feel you could make the same kind of advertising or claim now, given the way Malta is. But putting it in context, I think that's a general change that's going on right across Europe, and Malta is really just being included in that whole sort of like move in a busier way, more stressful sort of lifestyle than used to exist here.
But yet you still feel that Malta can give that element of holiday, slightly relaxed and good feeling, as opposed to some of the other places you've lived in?
Well, certainly where I live in England, it's okay there, but it's not sunny. I mean, my a friend of mine, he said to me, 8 months of the year, he has to wear a coat. He monitored it. He says, this is not a life that you have to wear a coat for 8 months, is it, really? And when I arrive in Malta, as soon as I step off the plane, I can feel the difference. There is a sense of relaxation, a sense of, oh, lovely. I feel as like my mother. I feel bonded. I can't explain it really because it's quite instinctual, my response to Malta.
But it does sound very comforting.
It is comforting, it's emotionally quite powerful.
Living in the United Kingdom, you know, growing up, would you tell people you were half Maltese? Would they realize? And what did people in your area, Liverpool, Birkenhead, what was their opinion of Malta, if they had one at all? What did people know about Malta at the time when you were growing up, and also nowadays?
At the time, nothing.
People didn't know Malta at all?
No, it could have been Hawaii. And
Despite the fact that Malta GC and Queen Elizabeth having lived here for a couple of years in the 1950s before she was queen?
Well, where I lived, I mean, some people did know, but generally people did not know where Malta is. But now in England, everybody knows about Malta, but then they didn't. And of course, since the 70s, people started going on foreign holidays. They only started in the late 60s into the early 70s, and so then people got a taste of going to places like Greece and, you know, and Italy and places like that, and Malta, you know, became,
what,
you know,
destination?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the 50s, not mm-hmm. really, no.
But nowadays people know in general about Malta. Good things or bad things, or what's their impression?
I've got to tell you, and this is the truth, that every Brit I know speaks favorably about Malta that's come here. They say, what a lovely place, how nice the people are. I think that's the thing that they really makes them feel good, is the hospitality of the Maltese. The English really love Malta. They come here, they really do, and they go away and they come back again and again and again. Now, why would you go back to the same place over and over again, other than the fact that you really liked it above a lot of other places, which maybe have a lot of nice things there, but you know, I mean, you can go to some countries, which I won't mention, and aesthetically they're kind of very pleasant, but I got told the other day how grumpy, unpleasant, and really rude some of these people can be in one or two other countries, which they would never want to go and go there again. But Malta comes up repeatedly. They want to go back to Malta. It has everything here. I'll tell you what it has for the British. It has the warm, friendly temperament of the Maltese, the weather, and they speak English. Mm. You can't get a better combination than that. You can guarantee the good weather.
Now, from your personal experience, your visits here, you probably feel the same way, warm, friendly people, but have you had any instances of not being made to feel welcome, any resistance to you coming here, living here?
No, not at all. I feel, I don't know what it's like for other people. I can only say that I came to live in Muster, and my mother was well established in this village town. In a way that everybody, so many people, know her. Wow. So people quickly say, oh, you're Garita's son, Paolo. She always spoke about you. She was always praising you. She always spoke so well of you that she'd sort of already laid down something for me just to step into. In that sense, it was funnily enough.
Well, that is a fantastic story. That's a wonderful position to step into, having had an introduction like that already. May I ask you, your mother has passed away now?
Yes, my mother passed away in April 2009, aged 90 years old.
Venerable age.
Yes, I think she had a good life and she good age, yes.
Did she enjoy her experience of living in the United Kingdom, or did she always prefer Malta?
And the fact she came back to Malta, I think she felt more at home here than in the UK. Although, while she was in Malta, when she came here, she was always very friendly with British people. And she'd tell them which buses to get, she'd invite them into the home here, give them tea, always welcoming. I know this from the letters and cards I have found sent to her from the UK. Thank you, Mrs. Bennett. You were so hospitable to us when you met us at the bus stop in Muster and showed us which way to go, and we enjoyed having a cup of tea and some biscuits with you. And there's quite a lot of letters I found and cards like that. And I thought, how nice is this?
Long may it be so that this aspect of the Maltese character remains, the hospitality. Now, have you managed to learn any Maltese, or have you felt the need to?
Eva, ftit.
And how did you go about doing that? Did you pick it up by speaking to your mother? Did you go to lessons or watch television?
A little bit of both. My mum used to speak Maltese a bit. I think if I'd sort of spent more time in Malta, I would have certainly been speaking Maltese. I feel it's important, by the way, to be able to say hello. How are you? Kifinti, bonjour, etc., etc., grazie. I think it's courteous if you're in a another country to at least say a few words. And but I try and listen to the conversations and pick words up and try and use them when I learn them. But I haven't been to any lessons. But I do use Maltese throughout the day. But it's not a lot. It's a very small amount. And I've got a phrase book. I do check on words if I hear something and want to. Yes.
And you're spending your retirement here, or at least some of it. Do you find that there are things to do? Do you, leisure facilities? How do you spend your time?
I like traveling around Malta. I like to go on for walks. I like Valletta very much, and I like some of the villages. And I'm less fond of busier places like, say, Parcheville. They don't attract me at all. And I write, I do a lot of writing, and I like quietness. So I do actually prefer a beach or countryside, a little cafe somewhere like Dingley or somewhere like that to say a busy place. But there are a lot of little niches, I'd say, for me in Valletta, where I can find that quietness. And I love Valletta very, very much.
Is it the architecture? Is it? What do you love about it?
Well, I did live there for a while when I was about four. But the architecture to me is fantastic. It's the history as well. Malta, the history of Malta, and yes, Valletta. To me, I find it amazing. It's amazing, yes.
You're living it while living in a historic city. You're actually living history.
Yes, I actually look, and I'm looking at, and I said, look how nice that is. Look how beautiful that is. Look at the work that's gone into that. And you're walking through, a place of great beauty. It's inspiring. Where I live in England, it's not so prevalent where I live. It's better in Liverpool, but then you're going into a big city, which is very noisy. Mm. But that has excellent architecture in Liverpool, but you're in a city there. You don't have any sort of, you don't have quietness there so much.
But we Maltese who have been living here all our lives sometimes are prone to complaining, perhaps. We feel that places like Valletta, some of it is still left a bit shabby or maybe not as clean as it could be. Some of the architecture, although a lot of work is being done on it to improve, some of it we feel maybe needs improvement. Do you see some of the things that we complain about, or do you see it as just one big beautiful place?
No, I wouldn't say I see it as one big beautiful place. I mean, I'd say the people, it would help if they were maybe a bit more aware in the sense to really respect the country. We had a thing in Britain, I think it was in the 70s, and it was like, keep Britain tidy. Mm-hmm. And I would say that would be something to aim for in Malta more, because some place you do see rubbish around, and I think it would, you know, it'd look better if some of that wasn't there. And because I feel it's the result of people just not really respecting the country as much as they should do.
So more educational campaigns would help. Did the campaign in the 70s that you mentioned in Britain, did it work?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I don't know how effective, but they used a combination of that, and also that you will find, if you threw something on the floor, you find, if I remember, £5 for littering, and maybe a bit of carrot and stick, really, you know, where you say, well, if you do that, we're going to fine you, and it's better if you take pride in the country anyway. Keep Britain tidy. It's just like a phrase which you drum into people in order that they respect the environment more. It is a education, and it's getting people to become aware of their environment and to respect it, because it needs to be respected, basically.
So an area that we can improve upon there. So what are the other things, perhaps, about Malta that you feel could be improved? Things that you look at or you experience and you think, I wish this could be better.
I think there's two areas that come to mind immediately. One is I think the diet could be improved. I believe they've got quite a high level of diabetes in Malta. And I really feel strongly about, the people need to, protect their health and their well-being so they feel good as they get older and don't get ill, and they also don't become, a problem for other people unnecessarily, which is what the results are from eating the wrong foods.
Unhealthy lifestyles.
Unhealthy lifestyles and also... Which it's the same in England, you're right, it's the same thing in England, lack of exercise, too much on the computer games, particularly with young kids. I see children, and some of them are really overweight, they're only 10 years old, and from what I have heard, I'm not an expert, you're talking maybe 10 years off the life, reduction of 10 years. I don't know if that's correct, but if it's true... then the parents need to take more responsibility and get more aware of the effect that the eating habits and the type of food they're eating is having on their children.
Speaking of food, do you like Maltese food? Do you find yourself eating it, or are you still more in tune with the British food culture?
Well, that's very interesting. I love some Maltese food. I say that because I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat meat and I don't eat fish, and I started that in 1973. So when you talk about Maltese food in English, I mean, I tend to eat, if I am cooking, rice, vegetables, beans. I would make that in England. And I would make that here, stir fry, that kind of thing. So that's the kind of food I eat. When I go out, I have salads often, sandwiches, and vegetable soup. Make some lovely soups in Malta. But obviously, I don't have brodo. I have some minestra sometimes if it doesn't have meat in. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit like that.
And the Maltese bread?
Oh, I love Maltese bread. I think... I wouldn't say I would, but I could almost die, because there's no bread I've tasted on earth. I'll tell you a little tiny story, small story.
You mean Maltese bread is the best you've ever tasted? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I love it. I mean, I say I could eat it and it would kill me and I would carry on eating it. I mean, because it's so lovely. I had a friend who came to live with me in 1972 in England. And he was from Italy, and he made bread. He worked at a baker's, and the bread he started to make was Italian bread, which, to look at and taste, was extremely similar to Maltese bread. And they used to have a line of people in lunch hour, maybe 20 people outside, lined up wanting to go in and buy this bread because nobody else made bread like that.
So imagine if Maltese bread had been introduced there at some point.
if it was introduced is introduced, I think it would be a real seller. It has an earthiness about it. It's very visceral, very... sensual bread. It's not fancy bread. There are breads which I call fancy breads. They're pretty breads. Maltese bread is not in that category at all.
But it's delicious.
Absolutely delicious, and I love it.
We spoke about diet and obesity, and that's something that you feel Malta could improve upon. Is there something else that gets your goat?
There are two other things. You're asking me these questions, and I'm being honest with you. One is the bus service. I think the bus service was much better when the drivers own their own buses, before Arriva came on the scene.
After Arriva now, there's a different company doing it. So you're talking about pre-Arriva days.
Yes, when the drivers owned their own buses, as far as I'm aware, they used to own them. The bus service seemed to be a lot more efficient. You would wait 10 minutes and a bus would appear. Now you can wait up to half an hour, even longer, somebody said to me before. I was talking to them about it, Maltese lady. And I think the service is a lot poorer now than it used to be. And the drivers have routes which are quite, some of them are quite difficult. And I actually feel a bit sorry for the amount of driving that they have to do through one village and then another village to pick up so many people. Driving through Sliema, some parts in Savoy, I mean, the roads are so, so narrow.
As opposed to how they were before, where all buses would go to Valletta and the system was simpler.
Yes, that was a lot simpler, and be honest, and I'm just speaking for myself, I preferred it that way, personally.
But surely some things have improved. The drivers seem to be, in general, nicer. The buses are nicer.
The drivers are okay. I'd say most of them are okay. I think their attitude is generally quite good. There's a few, the odd one, but you're going to get that anywhere, who are, you know, not always as pleasant as they might be. But generally, the bus drivers are okay. The driving sometimes is a little, I feel a little chaotic. The brakes are used too much for my liking. I hold the rail, actually, because I'm scared of flying forward. Maybe it's just old age, I don't know.
But overall, you're dissatisfied with the routes and the frequency of service nowadays, as opposed to how it was before.
The main thing is the buses are full up, and they are not as frequent.
Now, the other thing that upsets you?
Yes, this is a controversial point, but you're asking me, so I'm telling you. I find the hunting of birds a bit hard to accept, personally. There's lots of arguments, I know that, for and against, yes. But if you're asking me, it's something that I do find contention with and upsetting, as quite a lot of people I know have come here and feel the same way.
But you do get hunting in other countries as well?
Yes, I know, but it's a small island, and I think I read in a newspaper that there were 500,000 stuffed birds confiscated by the police between 1997 and, I'm not sure, 2009, and that seemed a lot of birds, which were all illegal, and that's not...
Yes, quite a shocking number.
I don't think it's acceptable, quite honestly, in a modern world, but I am aware of the point you're making about hunting. Hunting exists everywhere, and I don't think you can stop hunting. But I think there needs to be controlled a lot more, because it's only a small island, and birds come here to rest and end up getting killed. It's not very desirable. Also, it's one of the things that tourists who come here do find exception to, yes.
You're a vegetarian, and you mentioned the hunting. You're obviously an animal lover. Do you find yourself being an animal lover here in Malta as well?
Well, you can't help it. I mean, there are, unfortunately, that's, but I'm not making this a point, a lot of stray animals, particularly cats. I do my bit trying to feed them, as other people do in Mostar here, and I feel sorry for them. There's more stray cats here than in England. I don't see them so much there. But I think added to that, I don't think it's untypical of the Mediterranean sort of area.
Do you think that there should be a campaign, a system where stray cats are collected, neutered, and if there is one already, you think it needs to be improved? As you say, there are too many.
Yes, definitely. I think that's a really a move forward to neuter cats so that there isn't so many produced unnecessarily, which aren't going to be cared for or looked after. There needs to be some kind of system which is enforced in order that there is a positive future for these animals.
So we've talked about the negative things, but we have mentioned plenty of positive things that you love about Malta: the hospitality, the bread, the people. Anything else? Any other amazing things about Malta that you're proud of and that you would boast of to other British people or foreign people when you meet them?
I don't know. I just I've told all my friends they should come here. A lot of my friends have come here because I just say it's a nice place to be. And the interesting thing is they come here on holiday and they say, yes, it's a lovely place, I like it. I've got a friend, I told them, I said, they said, how are you doing and stuff, one thing and another. And I said, they're in Canada. And I said, when are you coming over? And they said, what a fantastic idea, from Toronto. And they want to come over and visit Malta. And they said they came once before and they really enjoyed it and they want to come back. So I support Malta 100% as a general holiday destination. And for all the reasons that we've spoken about, it's a place to come to. I think it's good. Yeah, great.
And do you feel Maltese? If somebody had to ask you, where are you from? What would you say?
Well, that's a very good question. I do feel, in truth, again, half and half. I don't feel English in the way that we conceive English might be, or maybe, or what we see in the media. I don't see myself like that. And yet, on the other side, I don't feel fully Maltese either, because I've lived in England for such a long time. So I do feel a bit of a mix. Instinctively, I'm attracted to Malta. But I've also got a different cultural experience living in England. So I have my angle on seeing Malta or living in it is different than maybe if I was just Maltese living in Malta and I hadn't been off the island, maybe, except for a few holidays.
Well, that's the whole point of this program, to get a perspective from people such as yourself. Do you feel that Britain has changed in a way that you don't feel so much at home there anymore?
Absolutely. And that's, that's a feeling shared by many of my friends who live in England. They feel that society nowadays is people are less happy now than they've ever been. People are definitely preoccupied with surviving. A lot of my friends are not happy with the political situation because there's a lot of people now who are in poverty in Great Britain. And yet there is a lot of people with a lot of money. So there is, it doesn't feel a great place to live. I know people are just, if they had a place where they could go other than the UK, although they still respect the privileges that they have coming from Great Britain, they still are critical of some of the things I've just been saying, if they had a choice, they would leave Great Britain and go somewhere else.
What about the future? Do you see yourself spending your twilight years here in Malta, or will you be still commuting between the two countries, or...?
As things stand at the moment, I see myself spending more time in Malta. And why? because I like being here. I enjoy it. I have good friends here, both Maltese and expats. In England, it's people, as I said, they're too busy. They are like, unfortunately, they seem like rats running round in a wheel, you know.
Or a rat race. People are less happy, like you said, even though they have more things than they ever had before.
Yes, that's. I think that's it. They have a fair amount of wealth, enough to survive and get by, and some people have a lot more. But the country is less happy now, I think, than ever it has been for a long time, maybe since after the war.
You mean quality of life?
Yes, I think quality of life. Community is not as it was after the war years. There was a great sense of community in the post-war years. People helped each other more. Even though, that would be in the 50s, 40s, 50s. And for me, the 60s was the time I felt a big difference. But there was still a sense of community. Now, people feel more isolated, feel more lonely. A lot of marriage breakdowns. People don't feel they belong to a community anymore. They feel like individuals on their own. And this doesn't create a happy society, because you're not a society anymore. If you feel that's how things are, you feel alone. I mean, you know, people are going to be prone to more depression, which I think is quite high in England. So hence the amount of antidepressants which are, given out to people who complain that they're not very happy.
But here in Malta, you feel that the happiness levels are higher and you are more, and you will be content to spend more time here.
Yes, 100%. I think, you know, we're generalizing. I see people here unhappy, but generally, I see people happier. It's happier is the word. And I don't think there's any utopian happiness anywhere. But to me, Malta is a happier place. And people say, you know, if they said to me, why do you go to Malta? You know, it's quite simple. You know, I told you, I arrive here and I think this is, I like it. I feel good here. If I'm walking in the street at night, I wouldn't feel quite the same way I know in the UK.
Paolo Bennett, thank you very much for being on Minainen Baradin.
Thank you very much, Colin. I really enjoyed the interview.